This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of a company called ID.me. And today we're going to talk about single sign-on and benefits and veterans. And I think there are many listeners who are keyed into my show for technology topics. Finally, we put technology in working boots. And you're a guy who's familiar with boots pretty well, aren't you, Blake? Tell us about your background, please.
That's right, John. Thank you for hosting me. By background, I was an Army Ranger. I was in Vanderbilt's ROTC program when 9/11 happened. Decided that I wanted to be an infantryman. Ended up leading a platoon of scouts and snipers in Iraq for 15 months back in 06, 07, hunting high value targets. And after that, got into Harvard Business School and met my co-founder and now am running ID.me.
Great. Most businesses solve a problem. You know, you show up at an airport, you want breakfast. Okay. Your car breaks down, you take it to a mechanic. Okay. So let's address the problem that you have identified and we'll go in more detail, please.
Sure. So I think the basic problem is that people like you don't have a way to verify who you are when you're online. And a related problem to that is you don't have a way to verify the group affiliations about yourself that are true. And it turns out that for brands and for organizations who need to rely on a trusted interaction, they're prevented from delivering certain benefits and access to you unless they're able to establish a certain level of trust in that interaction.
I'm an old geezer. I remember in the 60s, before you were born, there was a group called The Who, and they had an album out called Who Are You? And then Who's Next? Right. And that's the question you're trying to answer here is that, you know, in the olden days, you'd walk up and they'd say, you want to write a check? Okay, Blake, show me your ID. And it sounds like a naive world back with Ben Franklin or something. You show an ID, get out your quill pen and write a check, and they'd say, thank you, and move on. Now, digital world, everything changes.
Right. And I think, you know, where you had smaller communities and when society was a little bit different, you could rely on facial recognition, voice, you know, because you interacted with those people.
Here's old Blake.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. But now, you know, we're a global interconnected economy. And one of the things that will always be a prized attribute of the web is anonymity. And you need anonymity, but you also need trust, especially as more and more transactions are becoming digital. Access to medical records remotely, access to your financial information and to your taxes, there has to be a way to establish a certain baseline level of accuracy when it comes to identity if you want to perform those specific interactions.
The folks up at NIST, just up the road here, they have something called NSTIC, National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace. And I think those smart folks up there are, this is a problem, and we're going to start trying to figure out a solution. They realize that it's a dynamic solution, it's going to change, but they've jumped into it, haven't they?
They really have. Jeremy Grant, who leads National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, is leading the executive branch's initiative to make online interactions safer, more trusted, and more secure. And you know, it's hard to kind of be against those three principles, you know. And in the federal space, right now, you've got different agencies that impose different protocols and have different identity proofing partners, and it ends up in a lot of redundant expenditure in terms of the identity proofing that they have to pay to, you know, a LexisNexis or a credit bureau. And at the same time, it's not as efficient for the individual because they're having to create an account with each one of those individual agencies every time they log on. So the whole concept of NSTIC is really about, you know, fair information practice principles, but it's also about interoperability. How do we establish a credential where users have choice, but when they pick a credential that they want to adopt, they can use that across a network to seamlessly log on. And it also has the added benefit of saving, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for the federal government if adopted at scale.
We could probably do 15 one-hour shows on federal identification and the ID card and challenges and standards and everything else. And so just from the start here, I want to say, well, what we're talking about is let's say you were in the Navy and you leave the Navy and you want to access some of your benefits. And how does that, you know, step-by-step work? For example, I think this is a real good example. Mm-hmm. There's a company up in Maryland called Armorall, you know?
Yep.
And so I waltz into an Armorall store and say, I want to get one of those fashion shirts. And how much is it? $50. Well, I was a Navy SEAL. Oh, really? Yeah, I was Navy SEAL. Oh, you get a 10% discount. Great. Now, how are they going to know I was a Navy? They're going to look at me. They're going to say, I'm king of the cream puffs. I don't look like a Navy SEAL. But if I say I am, well, I guess he must be. And so that's the challenge right there. So who's who? I mean, this is the starting point for the problem, isn't it?
That's exactly right. And I think Wired actually did a column on us where they noted that there's, I think, only 4,000 or 5,000 Navy SEALs in the country. But yet at any given time on the web, there's about 4 million Americans
who claim to be Navy SEALs. Wow.
So, you know, one of the big problems, if you look at the current state of credentialing options, just physical credentialing options available to veterans, if you're not a retiree, which, you know, 85-90% of us have not served over 20 years, which is what DOD classifies as retirees, we have this form called a DD-214, and it's got our Social Security number on it, our name, our date of birth, our blood type, our entire educational history. And that form has become the ubiquitous ID card for veterans because we weren't issued a veteran's ID card. So, you know, everything from Outback to Sprint to all these other stores that want to honor veteran service oftentimes require you to show a form that's got all of your personally identifiable information. So a huge component of what we do is to make those interactions more privacy enhancing by limiting the data shared to the actual legitimate business need in that interaction. So if it's a retailer trying to give you a discount at the Armorall store, you know, right up the road, all they need to know is that John is in fact a veteran, and that's it. They don't need to know, you know, you certainly don't need to know your blood type or your social.
It just dawned on me. You were in the Army, and you served, and you left. You didn't stay 20 years. You were exactly the same position, weren't you? I mean, they discharge you. They say, okay, here's the DD-214. Yep. Good luck. Bye.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you try to access your benefits, and they go, who the heck are you, Blake? Are you Blake Jones? No. Yeah. I'm Blake Hall.
Yeah.
Blake Hall? Blake Smith Hall? No, just Blake Hall. And a simple name like yours, there might be 1,000 Halls out there.
Yeah. There could be so many of us, right? And so, you know, the fallback option is to go to this form in order to prove who you are. And because it's not digital, you know, there's barriers there. So not only is this form really dangerous as far as transporting it, you know, if you leave it in your car and your car is broken into, if you give it to a vendor, if you upload it to an organization like a nonprofit that's trying to serve you and is trying to do the right thing, but does not have, you know, the bank and federal government grade security that you need to protect that information, veterans are at elevated risk of identity theft simply by trying to claim benefits that that they've earned or that people are just trying to give to them out of goodwill.
So I'll cut to the chase. So the answer is go to id.me, id.me.com, and sign in, and you will establish a way to prove your identity as a veteran, and you can qualify for benefits, a whole wide range of benefits. And so that's the sense what we're talking about today. So right. If you are a federal IT professional listening to this show, thinking we were talking about cards and identity and cloud access, we're talking about you. I mean, you know, you go home and you're a veteran, you work for the federal government, how can you identify yourself? And this is one proffered solution is ID.me, and it seems to be gaining some steam.
Yeah, you know, we've been really excited. Under Armour was the first national brand to adopt us. They wanted a consistent customer experience across their channels. They were offering military and veteran discounts in their offline stores. But when it came to their .com, you know, they said, look, if I put a tick box in my checkout flow that says, check this box and save 10% off if you're military, half my customers are going to check that box because it's the web and people are disinhibited. And once we understood that that was an issue, we said, okay, understand that the fear of fraud is keeping you from doing this. We went out, partnered with a Fortune 100 military-focused financial institution, figured out the different government agencies that are the authoritative sources, and we basically built a PayPal for digital identity where you can attach a verified attribute, in this case, your military service, to the email and password that you used while signing up. And then at lower levels of risk and value, you know, like a retail discount, you can use that to claim benefits across a network of sites. And now, you know, Sam's Club, Overstock, we have a pilot with Veterans Affairs, WWE, U-Ship are all using the technology. We've got many more brands that are integrated as well, and actually have the world's second largest retailer will be live on the 24th, but I'm not allowed to say who that is just yet.
Well, maybe he'll say it after the break. We have to take a break here. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Blake Hall, one of the co-founders of ID.me. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Blake Hall, one of the co-founders of ID.me. We're talking about single sign-on, and no, nothing to do with the cloud, nothing to do with mobile devices. This involves you. This involves the listener who maybe went to college, spent a few years in the Army, is now working for the federal government, and how do you access some of those benefits that you earned? I mean, if you got paid peanuts for plenty those years and put your life on the line, you might as well cash in and take advantage of what you got. I mean, this is all we're talking about. It's like if you have a benefit there, all you have to do is come in and take advantage of it. I mean, and what you also want to do is don't want to have some bozo like me taking your benefits, waltzing in and getting that discount where, I had nothing to do with it. I didn't earn the right to be a Navy SEAL. And how can we prevent some fraud there? I was cleaning out the basement last week, and I saw a couple of certificates I had. I used to take these tests, you know, MSCE and Security Plus, mm-hmm. Network Plus, and A Plus, and Security Plus. And you learn all about security and single sign-on, and you need to know a lot of details about how this whole process works. And there are probably some listeners who want to know about this whole process. So, ID.me, okay, what's the magic sauce? How does it work?
Sure, and you know, you touched on a lot of the problems that we initially identified. Stolen Valor Act, you know, reached the Supreme Court where they were deciding whether or not they were going to potentially infringe a little bit on our First Amendment rights. Ultimately, decided not to, but it kind of shows how important it is to the country that, you know, people who have not served are not able to falsely claim these awards. The technology that we developed to solve that problem is literally it's a digital ID card at the lowest kind of tranche of risk. Well, there's two components of digital identity. The first is the identity proofing and the accuracy to which you do that. So, you know, is this information that you've self-asserted and just put in on a form? Is it information where you've proven to me that you have knowledge of a secret, like access to your financial account information? And if you look at Europe and digital identity, you'll see that a single sign-on where you use your, you know, Bank of America equivalent credentials to log into a public sector website is the way that you establish that you're you to a certain baseline level. So that's one way of thinking about it. And then the other component is authentication, which is, what are you actually using to log in? Is that going to be email and password? And that's fine for lower levels of assurance. But when you start talking about things like medical records, you need at least multi-factor authentication. And, you know, right now, the prevalent form of that is kind of a one-time password that's sent to a mobile device or a voice, one-time password sent by voice over a landline. But really, the future is going to be biometrics, whether that's facial, voice, or finger under glass, you know, kind of remains to be seen what the market's going to adopt. But if you look at some of Apple's recent patent filings, it looks like the home button is going to be a biometric sensor for your fingerprint, which is really interesting. So we've got a number of advisors who think that finger under glass is coming. So the way it would work is that, you know, if you're getting a discount from Sam's Club, you could use your Troop ID and the email and password that you verified when signing up for ID.me in order to claim that military or veteran benefit. And instead of having to show your DD-214, which has all your personal information on it, all you share with them is your name and your military status. You know, yes, John Gilroy is a veteran. And then Sam's Club goes, I trust the ID.me network. I know that they've proofed this individual to the baseline level that I require as an organization, and therefore I'm going to give you that benefit. But it's all supervised by the user, so we never share any data unless you explicitly authorize the fields associated with that transaction to go to that organization.
So is this some kind of infomercial that you know, three easy payments of $15 and you get ID me, or what does this cost?
It's always free to our members. And we think, you know, to be a widely adopted identity card, you got to be free. But to the organizations that use us, we charge fees to protect them from fraud. And right now, you know, that's really where the pain point's at. Their organizations pay billions of dollars in fraud across retail fraud and chargebacks. In the public sector, you've got all sorts of tax fraud, fraudulent, you know, claims to Veterans Affairs.
It's a cheap insurance policy for a company, isn't
it?
I mean, it's worth every penny.
That's right. It's worth every penny. So, you know, if we can show that, you know, you're spending hundreds of millions of dollars because the solution that you've got isn't as effective as a user-controlled identity card where they've proactively taken measures where we've been able to squeeze risk out of the system, then it's a no-brainer for the organization to decide to adopt that solution.
You know, this is simple enough that someone who's in their car listening, or there's snow on the ground, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and they're answering email, they're listening, they go, oh, I get it, you know. What they do is they help me assure my identity. And what they do is they drive their revenue from organizations that try to eliminate waste. And so this is it's a good win, because I win because I'm sure I can get my discounts. And a company like, I don't know, let's say Amazon, or a large company that sells stuff online, I don't pick another company, there's a million of them out there, can reduce fraud. And in the business world, fraud is it's almost a multiplier. It's just, first of all, there's reputations involved, and fraud just cost, I've heard billions of, I don't know how many billions, but billions of dollars. I mean, why would a company like LexisNexis even exist unless there were billions of dollars of fraud in the United States?
Exactly. And, you know, I was an economics major, and one of the things you learn that's different from academia about the real world is that there isn't perfect information in the real world. And when one party has all the information and the other party doesn't, there's going to be fraud, because that party can take advantage of you. And so that's introduced just a lot of inefficient things that happen because we don't have digital identification. One example of that is in 2009, Congress had actually passed retroactive legislation where if you were a stop-loss combat service member, so you were in combat and you're stop-loss, they were going to retroactively give you $1,000 for each month of combat that you were overseas, because they felt that morally wasn't the right thing to do. So a DOD manager gets that tasker that says, deliver these, you know, $535 million pool of funds to all these service members, and many of whom have become veterans post 9/11. Well, how do you find them? Because they've scattered back to their communities, right? You know, so how do you reach the 1 or 2% of New Yorkers?
Now, if you're retired, they're pretty accurate way to, you know, if you're officially retired after 20 years, it's accurate to find you. Yeah. But if you're just Blake Hall, you quit and you go off to do whatever you want to do, how do they find you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gone. You know, you can't go to the first sergeant and put the news out anymore. There's no, like, you know, .mil email address that you can use to disseminate the information that way. So Congress had to extend that program 2 years. The funds were slated to expire in October of 2010. They actually just expired in October of 2012. And despite a fairly heroic effort by DOD, they only delivered about $300 million of that $535 million pool of funds. So you had almost $250 million in combat pay that went unallocated because we couldn't find veterans. And so what we're trying to do with the retail sector is recreate a network, because if brands can verify that somebody's a veteran, now they've got that attribute in their email database. And, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, as we're working with all these retail brands, we can send out emails to our network. You know, we can go to, you know, hopefully at that point, Amazon and the PayPals of the world and American Express and say, you guys all have, you know, millions of veterans on file. Let's go ahead and send that email out for free to help these guys and gals get the combat pay that they've earned.
And Blake, no one's trying to scam anyone here.
Yeah.
No one's trying to double dip or do this and that. I'm trying to do this. And no, this is a benefit you earned, and it's due you, and you may not have realized it.
Yeah.
But if it's yours, it's yours. I mean, you might as well take and claim it. And I think we're trying to take and figure out a safe way to allocate these funds and reach the people who are deserving. And you know, I will hit a sensitive subject. There are veterans who are homeless in the United States today.
Yep.
I met a doctor, and his job was to find the veterans, because why should someone who served overseas wind up living in the street? I mean, just find his challenge was finding him in order to give him the medical benefits that they earned with their blood.
Yeah. You know, I think it's something that all veterans struggle with when they come back from a combat zone, particularly. You have a clear and definite sense of purpose when you're in the military, and you've also got a community around you to support you. And, you know, unfortunately, the transition period can be pretty abrupt. You know, I remember what it was like to get back from Iraq, realize that I wasn't going to die. I had all of my limbs. And then I was like, well, you know, I'm 26 years old again. You know, what do I do with my life? And I think for a lot of veterans, they don't make the transition. They don't have the support that I did when they came back. And it's easy to fall off the rails.
Transition we have to make is transition to a commercial. When we come back, talk about password fatigue. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're speaking with Blake Hall, one of the co-founders of ID.me. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio we have Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of ID.me. We're talking about single sign-on, but not for cloud computing and mobile devices and all these federal issues. This is for you. This is for individuals who are trying to take advantage of some of the benefits they earned. What if you're a federal IT professional, you know, beating your head against the wall with cloud deployments and security and input and everything else, and then you served in Iraq, and you may maybe do some money, and how do you know if you do the money? And maybe you didn't, at the time you came back, you didn't claim it. Well, this is what we're talking about, is just getting what you earned, and I think this is a fair way to do it. And one way is through just establishing a presence and with something called single sign-on. I have a spreadsheet for my passwords. I must have 89 different usernames and passwords. Yeah. I mean, every single thing, well, just sign up and, well, wait a minute, another username and password, and best practices to have alphanumeric characters and change every 30 days. So every 30 days, I have to change my password on 89 accounts and then keep track of it. I mean, you know, it's called password fatigue. You know, I last night I swam 2 miles. At the end of the second mile, I was beat. I was fatigued. Well, I mean, the password is just as fatiguing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's really difficult. I think the FBI said 12 million Americans had their identities compromised within the last year because of their reliance on passwords. And you know, the tricky thing about a password is that a good password is one that you can't remember in terms of security, but a bad password is you know, one that you can remember. So where within that spectrum do you net out? You know, we're bound by our memory, and so people end up picking things that can be easily guessed about themselves, birthdays, you know, pets, and a hacker who does a little bit of research on you can get that information. So a really driving factor behind the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace is trying to figure out how do you eliminate the reliance on passwords. You know, first, how do you just reduce the actual quantity of the kind of email and passwords that consumers have to rely on right now? And second, how do you make the email and password combinations or biometric factors that eventually will be adopted, how do you make them interoperable across a network? So you're managing a much smaller set of accounts across the network that you interact with.
Many of my listeners interact with blogs. Mm-hmm. And I have a blog. If you want to find my blog, you type in John Gilroy blog and it pops up. Do you folks have a blog? Can you recommend a blog for my listeners to learn more about ID and ID management?
Sure. You know, I stay really, I think Hacker News is always a blog and a community site that I go back to and check. Pando Daily, TechCrunch, GigaOm, you know, all of those sites are great ones to check. I think for identity in particular, if you actually go to the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace site, you'll actually see a lot of information about current trends. If you go to the Cantera Trust Initiative, and they are one of the frameworks that NIST has adopted to accredit these different identity solutions, they've got a lot of blogs that cover kind of emerging trends in the market if you want to stay current on what's going on with single sign-on.
You know, Blake, I do a lot of events. I was moderating a panel earlier this week. And, you know, let's say I'm moderating a panel and I meet you and we have lunch at the event and we're talking. And I say, well, Why should I trust you guys? Mm-hmm. Who are you? Who died and left you boss? I mean, why should I even, what's the magic sauce behind ID me?
Yeah.
Tell me step by step. Why should I trust you guys?
Yeah. So the great thing about the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace is that you can get accredited to different levels of assurance.
There we go. And that's the answer.
It's a trust mark, right? So it's almost like a Ranger tab, right? That if I've got my Ranger tab, other folks in the military can look at me and go, oh, I don't know Blake from Adam, but they're, you know, he's met a certain caliber and a certain standard that is worthy of my respect, which to my mind is what the Ranger tab, you know, symbolizes, that you live you've established habits and you've attained a certain threshold to achieve that recognition. So similarly, you know, if we meet the threshold for the different levels of assurance, you know, I've been accredited to level of assurance 2, I've been accredited to level of assurance 3, and level of assurance 3 is the highest level that the Cantera Trust Framework and NSTIC goes to right now. If you go to level 3, you can do remote access to medical records, multi-factor authentication. So it wouldn't just be email and password. It would be some other factor to make sure that, you know, somebody hacked John's account, they can't pretend to be you online. And that really kind of levels the field and establishes rules of the road, which is what you need whenever you're building a new market.
So I go to ID.me and I wonder, well, should I sign up for these guys or not? And the assurance that I have is that you have been accredited by the NIST folks and you work with an organization called Kantara. Mm-hmm. And maybe you could tell the folks about this Kantara.
Yeah.
So tell us about that. And where does it all fit in?
You know, so basically there's different trust frameworks for different verticals. So I think there's one for biopharma and health that has been accredited. But at the end of the day, just like with any market, what NSTIC is trying to do is establish standards so that if you are a commercial entity, And they've developed many of these standards in collaboration with the financial sector and with commercial entities. If you're a federal agency, you can say, okay, I've got, you know, medical records, I've got claims information if I'm the VA. But in order to release that claims information, which is highly sensitive and should only be released to an eligible requester, I need identity proofing up to this level. And I need, you know, two-factor authentication, let's say. And so that allows the agency to set the rules, and then anyone who's an identity provider who's got a single sign-on that meets those rules, that individual should be able to use that single sign-on to log in. So whether it's your bank's single sign-on, whether it's you know, our single sign-on, whether it's you know, PayPal or you name it, you as an individual would have choice, but you'd be able to use that login for really heavy-duty use cases, which is pretty neat.
So CSP, the designation stands for Credentialed Service Provider.
That's right.
And what exactly is that? Is Kantara one or are you one? Or
so they are the auditor. So they basically supervise and accredit the different auditors that will come in and assess your solution. So a credential service provider is sort of end-to-end across identity proofing and authentication. You are accredited as having a solution that can level people up to a certain level of trust in order to gain access to a particular benefit. And that's literally as simple as it gets.
In my world, there's something called an SDO, Standards Development Organization. Mm-hmm. And Kantara is not an SDO, but they recommend SDOs. Is that correct?
That's correct. So so within kind of the broader frameworks and NIST publications and everything else, they've got a checklist that says if you want to meet level of assurance, you know, 2 or 3, here's all the different things that your solution needs to be capable of. And, you know, it's just as much from a policy perspective as it is from a technical perspective. And things like, you know, are you minimizing the amount of data that you're retaining and that you're storing? Are you sharing only the information relevant to that transaction? Things like that that can enhance privacy while also allowing more interoperability and ease of use for users.
So Kantara is going to knock on your door and go, well, tell me about your physical security. Tell me about personal information. Tell me about data redundancy. What happens if there's a flood? Tell me about your platform using your next door neighbor's closet. They have a checklist, a very specific checklist. And if you don't meet the criteria, you're out of there.
That's right. And so, you know, one of the first things, security is literally the number one priority on my list. We brought on Glenn Schoonover, who's on this program, I think a couple months ago. And Glenn was the first chief network security officer of the Pentagon. He's our director of information security. And so we've literally built bank-grade security on the back end, where we use a FIPS 140-2 validated encryption solution, which is one of the standards, you know, required if you're going to do some of these heavier-duty interactions like medical records, AES 256-bit encryption at rest, and then RSA 2048 in transit, you know, and just making sure that our back end is completely buttoned up, our physical security procedures are in place, and we've totally closed it off. And then, you know, finally, that if you're going to access sensitive information, it's got to be a group of admins. It can't be a coyote within the organization like an Edward Snowden, you know, that can get access to stuff. So just like the military taught me, my job as an officer is to mitigate risk, and you always want you know, more layers of redundancy so that you never have a system failure.
So you go to id.me and you look at it, and the website, it's a very simple website. It's very easy. There's a button, it's sign on, do this. And it kind of is an overlay for some very, very, very serious, complex work that's been done, and you can look at it and say, oh, it's kind of trivial. No, you don't get it. You know, Kantara is going to look at every single aspect of your security. They're going to probably check your physical security, and then talk about backups as well. I mean, this is a very complex process in order to appear easy. It's like, you know, playing shortstop in the very easy, very hard to do, but they make it look easy, don't they?
That's right. You know, Part of what we needed to do is to have a very consumer-friendly brand, but also to let people know that, you know, hey, we've built this really serious technology that can protect your information. You shouldn't have to use your DD214, you know, to save 10% off at Outback. But if your DD214 is the only way that you can prove that you're a veteran, well, you know, that's the problem that we were dealing with, right? So how do we both verify that you're a veteran, and if that's the form, protect that information to bank grade levels while enhancing your privacy?
Let's take a break. When we come back, talk more about your company and single sign-on and new areas you're heading into. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Blake Hall, one of the co-founders of a company called ID.me. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of a company called ID.me. This is an organization that found the problem of many veterans have a difficult time identifying themselves to organizations. And you can go to idme.com and set up a way to have your identity verified so you can qualify from the benefits that you have earned and they're out there. And it's pretty easy. ID.me is a nice, simple website. You know, I talked about it earlier. Now, the benefit is it real simple. It's not real complicated. And you know exactly what to do. And there's no charge.
Yeah, you know, we really want it to be a very user-friendly digital identity network. You know, just as PayPal has become the consumer standard for payments, we would like to become the consumer standard for digital identity. And that's why, you know, we recently expanded to cover students and first responders as well, because a lot of the organizations that we were working with said, you know, we have a lot of these offline programs where we offer benefits to these groups, and you know, would you be willing to verify them as well? And, you know, figured out how to verify students across public, private, and physical credentials. And once we felt that we had an internet-ready solution on the back end, we've populated another attribute that the brands who use us can verify on their online channels.
Many listeners are active in the Twitter world. My Twitter handle is @RayGilray. And you folks have a Twitter handle @IDme, @TroopID. Is that right?
That's correct.
Great. So you can tweet and follow and see what's going on. Now, Blake, every one of my guests has to do this 10-question test to find out if they're card-carrying nerds or not. And I'm going to subject you to this. I said Vivek Kundra, Todd Park, the whole world has to do this. So hope you studied for your test here. So how old were you when you bought your first PC?
Oh, goodness. Well, I used my... my dad's Mac.
I didn't care about used. When did you buy, you know, write a check or whatever? Let's go.
First PC, I was 15 years old.
Okay. And how old when you bought your first cell phone?
Cell phone would have been 17.
17, yeah, that's good. College. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do. It's Blake_Hall.
Great. Do you have a personal blog?
I don't. I just blog on the Troop Spot blog.
Me. Yep. Okay. Now, do you have any personal online backup?
As far as like the cloud storage, mm-hmm. I use Apple for all that stuff and Dropbox.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone 5.
Okay. Number of apps on that bad boy?
Oh, shoot. Four screens, however many they've got.
And I used to ask if, but now it's how many tablet devices do you have?
I've got one tablet device. I have an iPad.
Okay. What active social network sites do you participate in?
Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest.
Ooh, the girly man one.
Yes.
Pinterest, wow.
Yeah.
Good fashion shoes.
Well,
they're sexist. Boy, I'm getting in trouble with that sexist term. But it does trend female. That's all I'm going to say. Then you can come and sue me if you want. Now, last book you read, was electronic or paper?
Paper.
Well, you were going pretty good there. You had a couple dips there. I'll run this through the computer in my basement, which is a UNIVAC, and I will print out in green bar and put it in the U.S. mail. I don't even have your U.S. mail. Isn't that something? I don't even have your U.S. mail address. Yeah. Who cares, you know? Yeah. My kids don't have the email addresses of my other kids because they say, who cares, Dad? Our email's for like Ben Franklin.
That's right.
Or Blake Hall, that old guy, Blake Hall. He uses email. No one else does. The whole planet uses email.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, if you look at the success you've had with Troop ID, you can pat yourself in the back.
Thanks.
And what you've done is you said, well, this, I don't know, this kind of works here. Let's kissing cousin is probably firemen, first responders.
Yep.
I mean, firemen, I have a friend who's a retired DC fireman, and believe me, they earn their keep. And a lot of similar type, a military type organization, put your life on the line. I see a fire, I run. He sees a fire, he goes towards the fire.
Yep.
And I say, well, this isn't human, this isn't normal. And so where else are you heading?
Yeah, so I think, you know, what we've tried to do first is establish a network, especially in the retail sector, where students, first responders, military, senior citizens happen to be the groups that are most widely, you know, offered discounts. If you were to go up to a counter, you would probably see one of those groups at any given retailer that receives a certain percentage off. And as a result of protecting those programs, we realize pretty rapid member growth and user acquisition because we're much more valuable to those groups. The next question is where do we go? And there's kind of two parallel routes. We're going to add additional membership groups. So if you're, you know, 4-H, Boy Scouts, PTA, you know, whoever wants to enroll in the network, we'll start to add them. Those groups probably won't get integrated into the checkout flow like the military, but brands can set up landing pages that membership group can then send an email to. The second component, though, which is really exciting to me, is upgrading the level of trust in our credentials so that we can get to an accredited level of assurance 2 and level of assurance 3 standard. And that can allow veterans to do things like remotely access their medical records, remotely access their personnel files, remotely access their claims information. You know, for first responders, eventually it could be used for access control decisions. So if you think about Katrina after New Orleans, when there were a lot of fake doctors showing up and fake first responders.
And I play one on TV.
that's right. I slept at a Holiday Inn last night. Yeah. You don't want that to become the standard for trust. But a lot of those teams were coming from out of state. You know, they weren't from Louisiana. And so if you're an on-site commander in charge of coordinating all these
teams. Again, it's a Uwalsen. Yeah, I'm a Navy SEAL. Yeah, I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, I'm a search and rescue expert in close, confined, compartmentalized spaces. Like,
who are you, buddy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, how do you verify that? And that's the problem that we want to get at and solve.
Well, you know, I wouldn't take my car to a mechanic shop that didn't have that little, you know, certification there.
Right. Yep.
But someone Walson says they're a doctor. Okay, you trust them. Well, in the internet, I mean, who do you trust? I mean, that's the joke with the internet is four dogs playing cards or four dogs on the internet, you never know who you are on the internet.
Yeah.
But you really don't. And this is one way to establish that identity. I think one target market for you might be foreigners who live here and don't have to pay taxes. And so I remember when I lived in Old Town, they used to walk into the social Safeway, you know, I'm paying tax, and they'd show an ID. Well, what kind of phony baloney ID is that? I mean, there's another, I never thought of applying, identifying to fraud. And you know, let's not be naive. I know we all honest and eat vegetables and brush our teeth, but there's some scumbags out there. That's a technical word.
Yeah. But there are. And at the end of the day, you know, that that clerk or that, you know, cashier who's looking at that credential probably doesn't have the training to know every credential.
Well, how can they? Yeah. They get out of high school. Here's Blake Call working high school and have him work in Safeway. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hard enough to remember email and password. Now you have to know what, you know, a foreign passport from a certain country looks like. And you know, that's really where technology can greatly facilitate those efforts in order to verify against authoritative databases that a certain credential is valid and that you are you, and that it can also prevent duplication. So if you were trying to show that credential across a network of different stores, we pick up, hey, this individual is not only submitting one false claim, submitting multiple false claims.
So Kantar is the accrediting body.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Great. Going to put you on the spot here. So what's going to happen 4 or 5 years? I'm going to walk into a Safeway and I'm going to get a retinal scan, walk in the Safeway, give them a blood, walk in the Safeway, have a thumbprint. I mean, is it all going to be bio? Is that the future or where's this heading?
I think fingerprint or glass is coming. I think facial recognition is also very promising. I don't know how people are going to react to it from just a privacy standpoint. I think you might find siloed applications. It remains to be seen, though. How the mass market adopts this, and certainly, you know, some of the technologists who are playing around with these new applications don't necessarily have the ability to predict how the market's going to react to some of these features. So, you know, we're keeping an eye on Fast Identity Alliance Online, which a lot of the big players are looking at. I think, based on Apple's patent filings, fingerprint or glass is going to be a reality. But what's really interesting to me at kind of a just a market trend level is that you have this convergence of identity and payments around your mobile device. And when we think about a mobile wallet, you know, in Google and all these, you know, Google's wallet and PayPal's wallet and everyone else's wallet has been kind of widely lauded, but not very well adopted because the friction of taking a card out at the point of sale is almost like a solution in search of a problem. But if you're able to add value in different ways, if you're able to identify yourself more conveniently, so for veterans, you don't have to have a DD-214. If you're able to order in advance through your mobile device, if you're able to show a credential on your mobile device, maybe to a bar that verifies that John is over 21 without exposing your address and your actual date of birth, that's really interesting. And I think those use cases are going to be around in 4 to 5 years.
Just have to wait and see. We'll have to have you back on in 3 or 4 years because the technology is changing so quickly. Look at mobile devices and how that's changed. And maybe you'll have to use your mobile device to identify yourself. Maybe you won't be able to walk the streets without your mobile phone because that's your ID.
That's all
encrypted. It's safe. And maybe that's how a biometric system identification will work with that. And we can only expect and guess because no one could have predicted the number of smartphones have been sold in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Not even me.
Yeah. But you can think about like a bump application where like a bouncer has an app, you've got the app, you bump your smartphones, and then he gets a response with just the fields of information he's authorized to get as a bouncer. Yep.
We'll have to end our conversation here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Talking about our listeners here, but talking about our listeners who are veterans and how they can get the benefits that they're due and how to take this little ID management and involve it and engage it in the real world. I'd like to thank my guest, Blake Hall. He's one of the co-founders of a company called ID.me. Thanks, Blake.
Thank you very much, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.